You're listening to the home of cool, irreverent, and entertaining talk right here on LA Talk Radio. You're listening to Answers for the Family with Alan Cardoza. Only on LA Talk Radio.
Welcome, I'm Alan Cardoza, and you're listening to Answers for the Family. As a licensed private investigator and certified instructor in nonviolent crisis intervention with over 30 years' experience working with families in crisis, I've been fortunate enough to meet and work with some of the top professionals in this field. I will bring you some of these incredibly talented and caring people each week as we bring you Answers for the Family. Having escorted thousands of teens to specialized schools and programs, returned hundreds of runaways, and retrieved many abducted children, I bring a unique outlook on what our kids are going through and what can be done to help them thrive. And if that doesn't work, how to survive. This show brings you answers and options to raising children today and in our constantly changing future. Answers for the Family will address issues such as locating a runaway teen, family crisis intervention, building self-esteem, dealing with addictions, and international parental abduction. We will introduce you to specialized schools and treatment programs that can really help, and innovations in many of these areas. Now, before I bring on today's guest, I'm pleased to congratulate one of our incredible guests, Dottie Laster. Dottie was honored last night as Humanitarian of the Year for her tireless work to stamp out human trafficking throughout the world. Human trafficking is the fastest growing crime in the world today. If you would like to learn more about how your family or legitimate business may be at risk from human traffickers, attend a training hosted by Million Kids and Youth for Human Rights International. To be able to do this, you can go to Human Trafficking Training, Stop Slavery in America. It'll be February 26th from 9 a.m. to 4 p.m. The address is 5930 Franklin Avenue, which is Celebrity Center International in Hollywood, California. For more information in regards to this, please call 323-663-5799. And again, I just want to congratulate Dottie. She does tireless work throughout the world, and we're just very proud to be able to call her one of our friends. Now, my guest today is a former newspaper reporter and a correspondent for Newsweek magazine. She is on the nonfiction writing facility at Portland State University, and she is the mother of Amanda, Stephanie, Mary, and Molly. She's married to a writer, Barry Lopez, and lives in Eugene, Oregon. Deborah has written a compelling book called Live Through This. With this book, she gives us a window into her sometimes helpless, her mistakes, anger, and fiercely overwhelming love of her children. Deborah, welcome to Answers for the Family.
Thank you so much for having me on today.
Well, I need to tell you, I'm so happy to be able to have you on. And one of the main reasons is that, I mean, I've brought on a lot of professionals, you know, that have talked about this. And one of the things that I really wanted to do was to be able to get a parent that's gone through it. And after reading your book and being able to go through that and see what you went through, wow, I just think that there's so much that you can share with the professionals and with the parents out there that may feel that they're struggling with this situation.
Now, thank you for saying that. I'm really honored by it.
Well, and as I said, I did get a chance to read most of the book. I didn't get through all of it. I only got it a few days ago. But I was very, very impressed. And I guess my first question is, what made you decide to put such a compelling story down on paper?
Well, you know, I'm a professional writer, and so that's kind of how I express myself in many ways. And I really struggled with the fact that this is so deeply personal, and also that we would be very vulnerable in the book. We'd have to be vulnerable, or the book wouldn't be any good. So it took me 8 years to write the book, and that's why, because I had to really comb through my own reasons for doing it. I didn't want to write it to blame anybody. I wanted to write it to really investigate and do some self-excavation about why this had happened to us. The first few drafts did feel kind of finger-pointing, you know, the good mother left by the bad daughters, and I needed to get over that and find this balance where it's really about the dynamic we were caught in instead of the situation itself. And I didn't want to write it as fiction because I really believe that there are a lot of parents out there who are dealing with this, and we just were so frightened and embarrassed and, you know, humiliated that that we're not talking about it enough.
Well, I couldn't agree more, which actually poses the other question. As you were going through this for 8 years, how do your daughters feel about this?
Well, they've known for the 8 years that I've been working on this book, and I've shown them several drafts of it as it's gone along. And when it was accepted for publication by Houghton Mifflin, and the book just came out 2 weeks ago, I sat down with them, they'd read it, and I said, if you don't want me to publish it, I won't publish it. I want to. I think it would be very helpful to other families. And we talked about it for a long time, and they finally said that they gave me their blessing to have it published. They asked that their last name not be used and some things like that. But it all worked out, and they've been extremely supportive. And in fact, I think the book has allowed us to talk about things that we never would have if it wasn't right there in paper in front of us.
Well, one of the things that I loved, and I love the way that you started it, because it pointed out one of the things that is how long it stays with you. And I love mm-hmm. the fact that you started from the standpoint of on the bus and realized that even after 10 years, that it doesn't take much to stimulate all of those same feelings again. I thought that was incredible. And I think that that's important because, you know, a lot of the parents out there need to understand. I mean, this isn't something that all of a sudden you're going to send them away, they're going to go to a program, and then everybody's going to be great, and you're not going to have any more negative feelings about it. There's certainly going to be feelings that are going to carry with you, and I thought that was a great way to start it.
Well, I just so agree with you. I mean, that's one thing that I had to learn again and again, is to give up my illusions of how family works, and to really accept that we were in this for the long haul, and
right.
that, you know, even wilderness therapy or all the different kinds of programs we tried, they would work for a little while, or little splinters of them would work, but the girls had to decide that they were ready to come back and really build a relationship before we could do that. And I just wanted it to be fixed. I desperately wanted it to be fixed, and nothing was going to do it easily.
Mm-hmm. Well, and to jump to one of the questions that I know that many people are asking out there, but what advice could you offer other single mothers struggling with their mm-hmm. teens?
Well, I have a great affinity and sympathy for single mothers because I was one for most of my daughters' growing up years. But I also think that intact families or intact marriages, they're going through the same thing. I've met lots of families where kids have run away from those kinds of parents. But as for single moms, I guess the one thing I would say is be very careful about the lure of denial, because I could see that things were happening, but I kept telling myself, oh, they'll get over this. This is just a phase. They're just angry, but they'll come around. And I really engaged in way too much denial about what they were mixed up in for too long. And by the time I got it, it was just too late. So that's one thing. And also I would say, you know, that it's very frustrating that the legal system, police, schools, they, you know, our regular system can't help parents very much. They just don't help parents very much. So it's so necessary to find a community of other parents you can turn to and support each other. I didn't do that, and I'm very sorry.
Well, and I think that's a great piece of advice for everybody out there. And obviously, as I told you, this goes out to a lot of the professionals out there, and they would like more parents to get that information out as well, is to understand that they are out there. There are ed consultants, psychiatrists, psychologists, therapists that specialize mm-hmm. in dealing with these things. I'm glad that they're getting it. Getting it from someone like you, I think, has so much more emphasis. There's so much more power in it to the parent, because if they get it from somebody else, it's like, well, you know, yeah, but are they just marketing, or are they just doing this? So mm-hmm. I think that's great for you to
True.
Bring it up. Now, it seemed like, I mean, what I, one of the things I got from the book was that forgiveness seemed to play a large role here. That was, do you feel that that was one of your biggest turning points?
I do, and I think what I learned from writing the book, which, you know, which allowed me to come from a calmer place and go backwards in time and really comb through my past and look at my own culpability through all of this. But I think what I realized is that forgiveness has its own timeline. You know, it has to come to you rather than you go to it. I really believe that, you know, it just had to happen for us organically. And as my daughter Amanda says, that first we had to learn how to trust each other again. That was key. Mm-hmm. And then after that, I remember cooking dinner with them maybe, you know, maybe a year ago that we were all in my house cooking dinner. And I suddenly realized, wow, all of the anger I had toward them and this expectation that they were going to come and fall at my feet and beg for forgiveness, I just didn't need it anymore. We had found our way to peace without, you know, having to go through some kind of big scene about it. It just came to us, and I think it's so much more natural and real that way.
Right, and I think that was another thing I got out of the book, was that you seem to get past the concept of playing the blame game.
Yes, it's so true, and we were polarized for so very long, and it just kept getting worse and worse. And I think the polarization came from the fact that my ex-husband and I, when we divorced, we just didn't do a very good job. I didn't know this at the time. It took years to understand this, but we just didn't do a good job of being the united front for our children. We were, you know, playing them against each other. You know, we would say, oh, tell your dad that he's such and such, or tell your mother that I just don't like it when she does this. And the kids felt so caught in the middle that it just chewed them up.
Yeah. Yeah. I couldn't agree more. And we see that very often with the families that we're working with, mm-hmm. that if we can just get them to back off of each other and focus,
right.
focus on the kids. And just, and one of the comments that that I tend to make when I'm in that situation with a family is, you know, or with the parents, and I'll say, and this is the best interest in the children. How? You know,
yeah,
when one of them
right.
attacks the other one, you go, well, you know, I told them. And
right.
how is this in their best interest? Because I'm having trouble. If you can sell it to me, great. But I'm having trouble understanding that. So I think it's great that that you're covering that part of it as well.
But that said, I have to say that it's that when you're in the middle of it, it's very hard to see yourself in that way. I mean, I thought I was ferociously protecting my daughters. I really believed that at the time. And I think there's a, you know, that the best thing that I wish I had done is to maybe go away by myself, really think things through, maybe write in a journal or do something that kind of got me past this great big hump of anger, so that I could see that to help my daughters, I needed to do everything I could to make sure that they had a relationship with their father. And that meant that I could not be casting aspersions onto him all the time. So, you know, it's very hard to see yourself in that way in the middle of it, I think.
Well, and you mentioned journaling, and obviously being a journalist, I'm sure it's something that you see as a positive. But I know that with a lot of the parents, you know, we'll discuss with their children. They say, well, the children aren't communicating with me. You know, a lot of programs out there really promote journaling, and it sounds mm-hmm. like one of the things that you did with this book is this is an incredible amount of journaling for you to get to this point over 8 years.
That's right. The writing itself solved so much in me, and I'm really grateful for that. And I didn't sit down at the beginning and say, I'm going to help other families and write this book. I sat down and said, something really awful happened in my family. I have to understand what part I played in it, or I'm just going to be stuck for the rest of my life. And so I really went into it to understand myself better. And I know that there are even more subterranean levels that I maybe I'll never get to, but I feel like I at least faced up to some of my mistakes, and, you know, that's a good thing.
Mm-hmm. Well, one of the thoughts that I had as I was looking at the book was, I mean, what inspired the title, Live Through This? Or did you go through a series of titles till you came to that feeling like? Because one of the things I thought is it's just so perfectly titled.
Yeah, I'm so pleased with the title. And I did try a bunch of titles first, and then one day I was at the university where I teach, at Portland State University here in Oregon, and I walked into someone's office, and that great big poster from the Courtney Love's band, Hole, was on the wall of this teenage girl beauty queen, and she's crying, she's got these dead flowers, and at the bottom it said, "Live through this." And first I remembered how much that album had meant to my daughters when they very first started getting into this disaffection that became very serious. That was a key album for them. They listened to it all the time. But the thing that was even more important to me was that I realized in that moment, that's what I had to do. I had to live through it. I couldn't change it. I couldn't fix it. I had to live through it because when you're in the middle of that trouble, you don't get to just turn a magic key and have it go away.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I certainly agree with that. What would you say was the one quality in yourself that got you through this?
I think it was the deep love I feel for my children, and I had two little girls at home. There were so many times that I just wanted to stay in bed and put the pillow over my head, but I would think, you know, those beautiful little girls are down the hall and they need me to make a lunch and get them to school and take them to art class, and they just propelled me out of bed, and they took such good care of me. They were tender, loving, just the sweetest girls. And you know, also I come from a very traditional background. I grew up in Idaho, and I would not let myself believe that we were in the kind of trouble we were in. And I think, you know, part of that is self-delusional, but part of it is also just, you know, pull yourself up and get on with it. And I had a lot of that inside, that I just wanted to keep going and keep my home, keep my job, you know, just keep it all intact, so the girls, when they did come back, would find us there.
Mm-hmm. Now, other than your two younger girls, was there anyone else that played an important role in helping you get through this?
Well, my current husband. We didn't start seeing each other until, astonishingly, the girls, Amanda and Stephanie, had already jumped on a freight train. They were long gone, and I had no idea where they were. And when I became involved with this man who did a great job, because he never tried to be a parent to my younger daughters. He just was their friend. And also we made the choice to not live together, have him move in or me move in with him, because we thought that it was just healthier for the girls for me to keep that boundary very clear.
Mm-hmm.
And so he was extremely thoughtful. He knew exactly when to back off and just say, "Hey, you guys, I'm here if you need support, but I'm not going to put in my big opinions all the time." He measured it out just exactly right.
Mm-hmm. Well,
so that's good.
And one of the things that's really nice about the way that we send out the press releases and such is we start letting people know a couple weeks ahead of time, and we ask for emailed questions. Well, so we have some of those. I'd like to ask you some, and these are ones, again, that are coming straight in from listeners. And the first one being, it says, "I have a son that comes in and out of the house whenever he pleases. Sometimes he's gone for a couple days at a time. Are these the signs that he will eventually run away? Our relationship seems to be getting more and more distant."
Wow. Oh, I just so feel for that parent. That's exactly what happened to me, and that the girls were disappearing. You know, first they were missing curfew by a few hours, then they stopped coming home for a night, then, you know, a few weeks later, maybe two nights, and the whole time I kept telling them, "This is absolutely not okay. You have to come home." And finally, someone in Eugene, Oregon, where we lived, showed them how to jump on a freight train, and then that's when they were really gone, gone for months and months. I didn't see my younger daughter for a year. So I would say, yes, that's part of the sign that they're finding a community out there willing to take this child in. And, you know, this is just such a double-edged sword for me. Of course I wanted my children to have food and blankets when they were out on the street. But part of me feels so strongly that if they didn't have so much help, they would have come home sooner.
Mm-hmm.
But there are a lot of places for kids to go to get help.
Yep. And I know that
hardly any place for parents to get help.
That's right. And I think that you mentioned earlier about law enforcement. I mean, getting law enforcement involved, and for parents not to feel as though, you know, it's going to put their child in greater danger. I know that I worked a case recently in looking for a runaway, and I had discussed with the parent, you know, that I was going to fax and email over the posters and things directly to the law enforcement in different areas. And they asked me not to. They said that, you know, we have a fear that they'll be trigger happy, you know, that they will harm our child. And I tried to explain to them. I mean, and I didn't say it this way, but what I was thinking was, I think you're watching too much television. The bigger problem that we have with law enforcement is because they are so busy doing so many other things is that they don't do enough, that they don't get as involved, but it still benefits sending them something, because then if the kids are picked up for some other reason, if they're picked up because they shoplifted or that they were out after curfew, then they know where they're supposed to be going. So
yeah, I think that's a really good point, because when my daughters split up, they were in Tucson, Arizona, and the older daughter, Amanda, she just had it with living on the street. They'd been gone for 3 months. Very hard life out there, very, very dangerous, and she was exhausted. And so they were stopped by a police officer, and for the first time in all of that time, they'd been stopped many times by the police, but this time she gave her real name, and he called it in, and there was a report from me that I was looking for her, and that's what got us connected again. But Stephanie, the younger daughter, gave a fake name, and she was off. They let her go.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the other problem, is that, you know, it's all so complicated, but it's so easy for kids just to give a fake name.
Mm-hmm.
And as long as they want to be on the streets, they'll just keep doing that. But I do believe that when kids get tired and they go to a police officer and say, this is my real name, and there's a report that the parents are looking for them, that all adds up to, you know, a good thing.
Oh, absolutely. Well, let me jump to another one of the questions, one of the listener questions. It says, once everyone was back home, how were you able to keep the girls from going and running away again and just staying at home? And I know I know that the person sending this question in hasn't read the book, so I have an idea what the answer is, but why don't you share it with everybody?
Well, great. Yes, I'd like to. As a matter of fact, you know, many times I'd get them home and then they'd leave again. The book is about the escalation of all of that, how I put them in wilderness therapy, and they came home and ran again. I sent them to live with other families for 6 months. They came home and ran again. And again, it finally had to come to the point where they had to decide they were ready to come home. Because no matter what I did and how much money, energy, time, love I expended, it had to be their decision that they were willing to come home and stay. And once they did say, okay, I've had it, I'm ready to come back, then we really had a chance to turn around, which didn't happen overnight. It was still mm-hmm. years before we had a good relationship, but at least I knew where they were, and that was way better.
Right.
But it's not an easy process. It often gets way worse before it gets better.
Right. And that's where I want to tell the people, for instance, that ask that question, is you really need to get the book. I mean, if you get the book, you'll understand, because it goes through a cycle. You know, that's what I got out of it is that, you know, it's this cycle of okay, it's you know, they come back and it's starting to get better, and then it starts to cycle up again and the problems escalate. And I think that, you know, by getting the book, which in fact, I mean, this saves me asking the question myself, because it's also one of the listener questions, which says, you know, where can I contact you further, and and where can we buy the book? So why don't you share that, both of those?
Thank you. Well, the book is available at every bookstore, I think, and Amazon.com, of course, and Borders and Barnes & Noble, all of those bookstores online. And my website is DeborahGwartney.com. I'll spell that DeborahGwartney.com, and there's an email there that anyone could use to contact me. And also there, you know, I have a question and answer interview on there, and several other things that I hope will be helpful for getting parents in touch with other resources.
Right.
And, you know, because I think there are some great programs, really tremendous programs. The Wilderness Therapy really helped us just to kind of get back on an even keel and talk to each other. And then also an outdoor school in Colorado called Eagle Rock School was truly the turnaround for my daughters.
Mm-hmm.
It was a great place.
Okay. Well, then, and that's good to know as well. I want to take a break right now. I'm going to bring us down. I've got a little 1 minute commercial here, and we will be right back with Deborah.
Thank you.
And let's see. And maybe we won't. There we go. Founded over 25 years ago to meet the needs of families in crisis, West Shields specializes in resolving adolescent issues that negatively impact the family. From preteen to young adult, we are experienced and qualified to help. We offer solutions which include referrals to a network of top professionals internationally that we work very closely with in the fields of educational consulting, psychology, and psychiatry. Our in-home crisis intervention care program helps to stabilize families and bring effective resolution. We are supported by our licensed investigation company that enables us to offer legal and expert services for locating runaway teens and more. Our therapeutic transportation services help to ensure that adolescents in crisis are safely provided transportation to specialized schools and programs with unmatched experience and success. Simply put, West Shield Adolescent Services is the best solution when your family is facing personal crisis. Call 1-800-899-8585 and let us help you. Wow, I wish I was articulate. I wish I was as articulate as that guy. Okay, we are back. We are back with Deborah, who is the author of a book that, again, and I read most of. And believe me, come tonight, I'll probably be able to finish it. But it's called Live Through This. It is a very compelling book. It is a mother's journey through her daughter, through dealing with her daughters who have run away. And it's very compelling. I mean, I get a lot of emotion when I'm reading it. So, in fact, it's probably why I stayed up too late last night because I was really wrapped up in it.
Thank you so much.
Well, and Deborah, let me finish up on some listener questions. And if you've heard the show before, one of the things that you may know is I actually got chastised one time from some listeners who said, I went to all the trouble to email you in some questions and you didn't ask them. So, so I've learned. And in some cases, I haven't asked them because I think, well, I think we already covered that. But anyway... And one of them is, again, from a parent that says, what advice do you have to give about avoiding the situation altogether? Is it hard to see the point where your kid is thinking about running away or heading down that path?
Yeah, you know, I really worry about all of us as parents in this culture because I think that running away has taken on this certain charm for kids, and they see it as a adventure. I'm not saying all kids did see it as an adventure, but a certain group do. I'm just wondering how we can start educating kids about the dangers of being out on the street. They go out there, and I think they find this subculture that is very enticing because they say, oh, you know, we don't have any rules here. We'll let you drink beer and, you know, pierce whatever you want to pierce and all those things. And it's very hard to just explain to a child that they are in great danger by going out there. And I read just the other day that 75% of the girls on the street are sexually assaulted. And I bet that's a low number, actually.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess I would start with finding ways to have them talk with kids who did run away and came back and really know that that's not the kind of life that you want to lead. But also just, I really wish that I had been so much more careful about the kids my children were hanging out with. They just, you know, I didn't feel comfortable, but I thought, well, I need to let them make their own kinds of friends. But, you know, and I did check in with the parents, but I found out later that there are parents who will lie for their kids and say, oh, yeah, they're right here downstairs watching TV when they're actually not anywhere around. So, you know, just put the antenna up and be super attentive to who your kids are with, where they're spending their free time, and just inform them about the kinds of dangers that are going on out there.
Right. And if I could add,
not just drugs.
Yes. And if I could add to that, I think one of the keys too is for the parents, you're not their best friend. Okay.
Right.
Okay. Your job is a parent. As a parent, there are certain things that we all have to do, even if we don't like it. I mean, certainly we don't like to be the heavy all the time. We don't like to have to tell them they have to get their homework done. That isn't it. And I think sometimes parents get too concerned about the fact, and I run into this with parents too, and they'll go, well, but they won't like me. I mean, we're working a runaway case right now, and the mother will not get involved because she goes, well, I'm afraid that she won't like me. And you don't understand. You know, this is your job. You know, there's something wrong with your child. There's something wrong with your child if your child wants to have their parent as their best friend, okay?
Yes.
They are at that age. They're going to have best friends that are out there. You know, and you need to tell them this, not just because, you know, it's like, you know, as far as the running away part, you go, a lot of parents will tell them, well, yeah, but, you know, if you miss school, then you won't get a good job and everything else. Don't try to explain to them something that they can't see that's 4 years down the road. They're having trouble.
Right.
They're having trouble looking at what's going to happen next week. So to try to explain something that's that far in the future, I think the more immediate thing as the reason not to be out on the street is, just as you've said, there are dangers. And actually, I think I'll pose that as one of the questions, the dangers that you found, but one of which is human trafficking. And again, I happened to talk about it a little bit at the beginning of the show. There are also statistics on how many of these kids end up getting used for human trafficking.
Right.
You know, so.
Yes, I'm so thankful that didn't happen to my kids. So thankful, but I bet it's awful.
Well, share with us, and I know there's some of them, you shared some of them in the book, but share with the audience, what were some of the dangers that that you ran into, or that your girls ran into?
Right. Well, first of all, they were jumping on freight trains, you know, and the people who watch over the guards and the engineers and such and rail yards, they don't want these kids on their trains, and they are not nice about it. And I know my daughters were actually hit and beat several times with sticks and flashlights and things when they were caught on trains. And they don't even take the time to call the police. They just do their own kind of vigilante justice out there, which really frightens me. So that, but also, you know, there are predators all over the streets. There are predators who want to sell these kids drugs and get them hooked on drugs. There are predators who want to take advantage of young girls, and there's just nowhere to go to be protected. And I think that there are more insidious dangers, like both of my daughters came home pretty sick. You know, they didn't have any permanent illness, thank goodness. I'm so grateful. But their immune systems were worn down. They didn't feel good for years. It took them, they hadn't eaten right, they hadn't slept in good places. They just didn't, their health was not good. So, they don't care about that when they're 15, of course.
Mm-hmm.
But if I could go back to your earlier point, too, I just want to say that in terms of being friends with my daughters, I think a mistake that I would often make was to let them know how much they were hurting me instead of how much they were hurting themselves. Because I know that in my despair and my panic, I kept saying to them, why are you doing this to me? This, you know, you need to stay home. You're hurting me. You're scaring me. And I wish now that I had had the common sense to sit down and say, I want you to understand the consequences to yourself that you are getting into here. And like you say, not over explain it, but to say, here's the line. Don't cross it.
Mm-hmm.
Instead of always personalizing it, which I tended to do. And I really hope that I've learned to stay away from that.
Do you envision parents out there reading this book with their teens?
I hope so. I really do. Mm-hmm. I just went and spoke to a high school in Michigan about the book, and the kids had all read it, and they were so engaged with it. None of them had gone to this extreme, but I bet three or four girls came up to me after the talk and they said, after I read your book, I understand my mother so much better than I had before, and I'm going to go tell her that. And it, nothing could have made me feel better than that, just to open up some kind of dialogue or communication. So I do think it's good for kids to see a mother's panic from mm-hmm. that side, because they just, I don't think they think about it very much.
Well, I'm glad to hear that it was being read by an entire school or an entire grade within a school. I think that's incredible. Yeah. That was the feeling that I got. I mean, as I was reading it, and I was thinking, you know, I may be reading this with my boys here in the near future, and could also mm-hmm. see a lot of other parents, you know, reading it, you know, at the same time, you know, with their teens or even tweens now. So,
yes, because my daughter was barely 14 when she left. So it was very, I think that's a young age to be so daring, but I think there are a lot of kids who are doing that. And, you know, I have to say I do think that my kids were together, and so they really protected each other. It would be even scarier for me to think about a child going off by herself or himself.
You know, is there anything scheduled in your future where you and one of your daughters are speaking together?
Well, I will say that the two older girls and I did a piece on This American Life a few years ago, and it's still available on my website, which is deborahgwartney.com, and you can really hear their side of the story as well. So the three of us talk about what we went through, and I think the girls' voices are very powerful on this piece and how, you know, they made these decisions and why they made these decisions. So I think it's a good one to hear, and nothing else is coming up with the three of us, except there's an article in People magazine this week about us, and the girls are also giving their sides of the story in that article as well, in the current issue of People.
Yeah, and I think that's very powerful. You know, something like that, to where you have young people that are also hearing it directly from them, mm-hmm. you know, then it isn't just this is the parent's story or the parent's side. So
that's right, yeah. Yes.
I think that's great. Now, another question that actually came in, but it says, what advice would you give to parents that just feel like quitting? Because I'm sure, I mean, I can tell, I mean, even from reading the book, I mean, you thought about it, you know.
Many times.
Yes.
Many times.
So, no, envision now that you have other parents out there that are at their wits' end. And what can you tell them to where they're just not going to quit?
You know, gosh, that's a hard one, because in some ways I did have to finally quit. And what I had to do was stop this frantic search for my daughters, because it just wasn't going anywhere, and it was actually hurting my other two children. But what I didn't quit on is believing that we needed to be together again. I really worked on finding the strength to believe that very much. But what I told my daughters the last time they left is, I'll always love you. You have a place to come back to, but you have to live by my rules. You're mm-hmm. not going to come back here and be the head of the household. So that was a very hard thing for me to say, because I didn't want to give up this last little shred of contact I had with them.
Yeah, but that's still not giving up. And what I was right. getting towards is, and unfortunately, you know, I've dealt with families to where they've just said, you know what, I wash my hands of it. You know,
yeah.
and I think that's just the worst thing that they can do at
yeah.
that point.
But I sure wanted to do that many times. I just wanted to forget it and just, you know, concentrate on my two younger daughters. But I think I just, you know, I just knew, I just kept thinking about when these girls were younger, and they were just the sweetest, most loving and wonderful kids, such, doing well in school with tons of friends, and I just thought that those people are still inside there somewhere, and I just have to believe that they're going to come out again, and certainly that's what happened.
Mm-hmm.
And also just to find other parents to talk to, parents who've been through it and survived it, and can tell you, you know what, it's worth hanging in there. Plus, we had family counselors who just kept me buoyed up too. You know, you have to do this for your kids. This is what you must do. And I'm really glad that I had those people in my life.
Well, how much closer do you think your family is having gone through this versus having not gone through it at all?
That is such a great question, and I'm really glad you answered it, because I think we're much closer. We are just very tight with each other all the way around. You know, we still have our problems, but we have a great honesty with each other and trust. And one thing that I have finally come to is that I really respect the fact that my daughters have a great adventurous spirit, and that they really had this yearning, this longing to just go out and have an adventure. And now I understand that parents need to recognize that in their kids and find healthy adventures, mm-hmm. healthy ways to, you know, just throw themselves wide open to the world. And there are healthy ways to do that, and that I didn't need to keep trying to stick my kids in a conventional life, that I should have found the options. And I did so much better with my younger two daughters, because when they got restless, I said, let's find a place for you to go and really do this in a healthy way. So I'm a big advocate of that.
Okay, so if I understand what you're saying is that the two older girls, they weren't involved in as many other extracurricular activities, so it gave them too much free time?
Well, they were involved in extracurricular activities, but not the sort that they wanted. You know, they wanted to be kind of out in the world a little bit, and I wish that I had found things like Outward Bound or, you know, just outdoor programs of any sort, or, you know, just maybe get them to a foreign country for a few weeks so they could see how other people live. You know, just be more daring in what I thought that they could handle. All of that sounded expensive, but it turned out it wouldn't have been anywhere as expensive as what I ended up paying.
Yeah, in many ways, and not just financially.
In many ways, that's right. So, you know, invest in your kids' sense of adventure and possibility early on, so they don't have to go find it themselves in dangerous ways.
Mm-hmm. Now, what else would you want to share with the professionals out there, the professionals that are now meeting with you as a parent? What can they do more for you as a parent that you think is going to get parents to the answers quicker?
Well, I would say that the best therapists for me were the ones that I probably kind of despised at times, which were the ones that said, you need to own up to your own part in this. And because I just so wanted to be, you know, the good, loving mother abandoned by her children, that was a place that felt very safe for me, and I defended that. But there was one therapist in Eugene in particular who, every time I saw him, he'd say, you know, you need to see how you played a part in this. And the more I could do that, the more I could understand where I was falling down on the job, as you said. And he would tell me all the time, the ocean might be crashing around you, but you must be the concrete pier that never moves. And I just wobbled too much around my kids. And, you know, I think that the therapists that do the best for me were the ones who made me understand you have responsibilities and you must live up to them.
Well, I think that is great advice. I know that in working with a lot of them, that's the feeling that I get, is that these are the ones that are not, they're not afraid to tell a parent exactly what it is that they need to do. And in many cases,
right.
In many cases, that is look inward first before you start mm-hmm. trying to look outward.
That's so. Right. Because I kept saying to myself, I don't abuse my children. I'm a loving mom. We live in a safe place. I'm very engaged in their lives. I go to their schools, all of those things. The textbook, I was meeting all of it. But I wasn't willing to look under that surface at the part of me who was way over-identified with my own children and, you know, just saw it as a complete threat. If they left, then it meant that I would fall apart when I just, that wasn't okay for me to fall apart.
Mm-hmm. Well, there's another listener question, and I, you know, because it's what I do for a living, I mean, I kind of know the answer, and because I read the book, but I will go ahead and ask. But it's, you know, how did you find your daughters, and mm-hmm. did it get more difficult each time?
Yes, yes, it did get more difficult. I'm sure you know that very well in your professional life. Because, you know, they leave the first time, they're just down the street, but the fifth time they leave, they're in, you know, San Francisco or something. So it absolutely got more difficult. The first time they were gone for 8 days, I hired a private investigator to find them, and he found them within 24 hours. And then he took them to a group home. It wasn't a state group home. It was private, and I paid for it.
Mm-hmm.
And they stayed there until I could find arrangements to get them to wilderness therapy. So, and then he transported them there. So he knew exactly how to find them, how to look, and boom, it was done. That was the first time. And then other times they found me. I didn't find them.
Oh, meaning the girls found you. They eventually came back?
Right.
And
they called me and said, I'm ready to come back.
And
yeah, but that first time I hired someone and it worked right. Very well.
Right. Now, and what did they say motivated them to come back each time?
Well, my older daughter, Amanda, had very unfortunately, sadly, overdosed on heroin. And she was in the hospital, and that's when she finally admitted who she was. She just, her heart had stopped, and she just knew that was the end for her. And the younger daughter, as I said, went on from there. We heard from her about 9 months later. And she tried to live a life of a grown-up, and had just turned 15. She just couldn't keep it up, so she was ready to come home.
Well, and I think that's one of the things that a lot of people miss, and that is, at that age, not only do they need structure, but in most cases, they want structure.
Oh, they so want it.
Yeah.
They so do.
Yeah, and to eventually call and say, I'm ready to come back to the structure, I think is huge. But again, if we can get all of us out there to understand, nope, don't be their best friend. Give them the structure they need before this happens. That's going
to
be...
It's so true. I remember my oldest daughter wanted to go to a punk rock show at downtown. I absolutely did not want her to go. I think she was 14. I said, you know... Oh, I kept saying, and finally she came and she said, either say yes or no. Don't waffle like this. And she was absolutely right. I said no. We had a big screaming match over it. She was furious. She stomped around, slammed her door. But I'd said no.
Mm-hmm.
But I just should have been so much stronger and said, no, you may not go. Let's talk about some other things you can do instead.
Wow. You know what, I just glanced over at the clock. We're almost out of time.
No,
I mean, I looked up and I went, where'd the last 10 minutes go?
Uh-huh.
Anyway, we have about 2 minutes. So what I'd like you to do, two things. One is, again, tell people how they can get to your website. I love the idea that you have the show that you and your daughters were on that's on your website. You guys can go to that. Mm-hmm. Now, if you have any trouble doing that, again, everybody out there, you can go to our website. It's answers4thefamily.com. This show will be played over again. It'll be on our blog. You can get your kids with you. Sit down. Listen to it. Professionals out there, contact some of your clients, the ones that you know are going through this. Tell them they can go directly to our blog. Listen to it with their kids. Let them start to understand what the parents are going through. I love the fact of when you said that a couple of the girls came up to you and said, we now understand what our parents are going through. I think that's huge.
It is huge. It is. Well, I so appreciate being on. And my book is called Live Through This, and it's available at every major bookstore and online, of course, Amazon.com, Borders, Barnes & Noble, and my website is my whole name, Deborah Gwartney, DEBRAGWARTNEY.com.
That's good. In fact, that's one of the things I was going to say is make sure that you spell that because
it's a cumbersome Welsh name. Yes.
Mm-hmm. So again, I thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
And I look forward to talking to you again. In fact, I'll give you a call off the air sometime because I'm very, very impressed with the book.
Well, thank you. And thanks to all those listeners who sent in questions. Those were great.
All right. Thank you. And
thanks.
We are out of here.
You're listening to Answers for the Family with Alan Cardoza. Only on LA Talk Radio. You're listening to the home of cool, irreverent, and entertaining talk right here on LA Talk Radio.